There are many important words which could be very elaborately explained, but we shall briefly discuss the important aspect of each. The final statement is Atmavit Charanarchanam. Atmavit means a self-realized soul or bona fide spiritual master. Unless one is self-realized and knows what his relationship with the super soul is, he cannot be a bona fide spiritual master. Here, it is recommended that one should seek out a bona fide spiritual master and surrender unto him, Archanam. For by inquiring from him and worshipping him, one can learn spiritual activities. The first recommendation is Swadharma Charanam, or as long as we have this material body, there are various prescribed duties for us. Such duties are divided by a system of four social orders, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Sudra. These particular duties are mentioned in the Shastra and particularly in Bhagavad Gita. Swadharma Charanam means that one must discharge the prescribed duties of his particular division of society faithfully and to the best of his ability. One should not accept another's duty. If one is born in a particular society or community, he should perform the prescribed duties for that particular division. If, however, one is fortunate enough to transcend the designation of birth in a particular society or community by being elevated to the standard of spiritual identity, then his swadharma, or duty, is solely that of serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The actual duty of one who is advanced in Krishna consciousness is to serve the Lord. As long as one remains in the bodily concept of life, he may act according to the duties of social convention. But if one is elevated to the spiritual platform, he must simply serve the Supreme Lord. That is the real execution of Swadharma. Om Agyanati Manasya Ginnana Salakya Chakshura Militam Yena Tasmai Si Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sigurav Siyutapada Kamalam Sigurun Vaisnavam Scha Sirupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sivisakan Vitam Scha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesa Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radha Vindavaneshwari Vishabhana Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakal Patrubhya Chasa Kripa Zanubhya Vaja Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaisnavibhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Taitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasari Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So one must take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. Such a spiritual master is coming in a line of disciplic succession and is faithful and loyal to the previous acharyas. He is representing the teachings that are coming down in the Sampradaya. And therefore, he himself must be the embodiment of these teachings. Without properly dedicating himself to the instructions of the previous acharyas, how is it possible for him to carry forward the mercy of the Lord? Still, he must present Krishna consciousness according to time, place, and circumstance, and particularly make it relevant by looking at the condition of life the people are in and offering them Krishna consciousness according to their particular situation. Naturally, the principles of Krishna consciousness are not changing. The process for self-realization remains the chanting of the holy name. We see that Prabhupada, for example, chanted and had it recorded on a record, and that this record went to the hit parade and even in some countries was number one. Right? Like Germany, it was number one in the hit parade. That was unheard of. Even still in India, there are some sadhus who are questioning the fact that transcendental sound vibration can be recorded. They're thinking that how can it be bona fide once it is recorded? But Prabhupada had so much faith in the holy name that whatever the form the holy name manifests in, even in a recorded form, it is potent and acts. That is the amazing arrangement of the Lord. That as the Maya potency seems to become more and more manifest, then the medicine is also becoming more manifest. As Maya is broadcasting all her mundane sound vibrations, Krishna can also use the same broadcasting mechanism for Krishna consciousness. So, a great Acharya understands everything in the context of Krishna. So he's seeing that everything is Krishna. He's also seeing radios and TVs in the context of Krishna's energy and realizing that it is Krishna's energy that can be used for Krishna. So the Acharya has the, because of his transcendental vision, he can perfectly apply the transcendental knowledge of Krishna consciousness, which is very important. A disciple requires such practical guidance. There may be two categories of disciples. One is the disciple who is following the Pravritti mark, and the other one is following the Nivritti mark. The Pravritti mark is referring, mark means path or road, and Pravritti is referring to one who is trying to improve his material condition of life. The system of Varna Ashram is particularly meant for that, to improve our material life. And by following Varna Ashram, we can become gradually uplifted to give up sinful activity. The whole purpose of Varna Ashram is to give up sinful activity. For all classes, whether one is a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Sudra, there are prescribed duties for each of the different classes of men, and they are meant for purification. Varna Ashram is meant to become purified from sinful life. Sin simply constitutes that activity which is not pleasing to Krishna and also not pleasing to the self, and therefore it causes suffering. Yes. Because we are the eternal part and parcel of Krishna, mamayvamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana, and therefore whatever is pleasing to Krishna is also pleasing to us. That is a very essential element to understand. Therefore, the word sin is a loaded word, right? It is a word that people feel sin, you know, do you have to speak about sin? Do we have to go through this whole thing again of condemning activities, right? We are so tired of this feeling of guilt, this feeling of darkness, doom, hell, and all that. No, this cannot be religion. Yeah, that's not the point. It is not that sin has to be seen in the context of here is the law of God and if you break it, you'll be punished. Sometimes we may see like that. But we are simply seeing it in the concept of the example of the Hitopadesh. In the Hitopadesh, there is the story about the census that went on strike. The census said, we don't want to work for this stomach anymore. We're tired of it. Always slaving away. We'll keep everything for ourselves. But as the census did not give the food to the stomach, all the senses became weak. and couldn't function anymore. So that is the nature of sin. That sin is activity that cuts ourselves off from our natural happiness, and then we are starving. Right? Therefore, it is in our own self-interest to give up these activities. It's not that we have to avoid these activities, otherwise God gets angry and he'll punish us. If we understand it that way, then we might also become angry with God. Why is he such a punishing, heavy personality? Right? How could we ever love such a God? Therefore, we see that in Christianity, there is this concept of sin. And the result is that it's like crime and punishment is the whole concept. Crime and punishment, as Dostoevsky wrote his book. And the whole idea is it's instilling fear. Therefore, everything is relating to a God-fearing man, they say. Right? And that is considered to be a virtue, to be a God-fearing man. But in Krishna consciousness, to be a God-fearing man would be considered to be like a great defect. It would be considered like God-fearing. We're not supposed to be God-fearing. We're supposed to be God-loving. We're supposed to be feeling very comfortable with Krishna, very protected by Krishna. And yet, we should understand that if we're not following the activities based for the pleasure of Krishna, that we will not be pleased ourselves either. It is impossible, because we are parts and parcels of Krishna, just like Krishna. So, therefore, a devotee is automatically avoiding sin. Therefore, it is said, one who is really surrendered to Krishna, he does not need to concern himself with varnashram. That is for those who are materially conditioned. But those who are transcendentally situated, they do not require, because they automatically are always acting for the pleasure of Krishna and therefore acting purely. And they'll become automatically pleased themselves. Krishna consciousness is simple like that. We must come to this transcendental platform. Prabhupada started this movement specifically to emphasize the transcendental platform. And he was calling his disciples to come to this platform of transcendence. But as time is moving along, it is for many not possible to maintain the transcendental platform. Therefore, then the second best is varnashram. Then that may be accepted and adopted. Prabhupada told Bhakti Charu Maharaj that he said, yes, I haven't finished my work, this Varna Ashram. I want to institute it because there will be many people who will not be able to come up to the transcendental standard. However, again, we're not speaking about the temple devotees. Temple devotee means transcendental standard, no less. Even congregational devotee, in many cases, should be transcendental standard. Why not? Transcendental standard that we do anything and everything, whatever is required for the pleasure of Krishna. Anything. It doesn't matter. The thing itself is insignificant. The pleasure of Krishna is what counts. That is the platform of surrender. Unconditional. And that is generally our preaching. Our preaching, Prabhupada's preaching, was not generally varnashram. Prabhupada's preaching was generally surrender to Krishna. And that should be our preaching and our attempt to just surrender to Krishna wholeheartedly with all our energy and make that our objective, to become pure devotees of the Lord. It is possible. It is possible by following the spiritual master. Because the spiritual master will instruct us and will tell us the next step. One cannot very easily jump immediately to the pure devotional platform. It is theoretically possible, but practically we see that it is very, very exceptionally achieved. Like Kadvanga Maharaj is described as attaining pure devotional service in an instant. But for us, it may not be like that. It may be step after step. But that's all right. If one accepts a spiritual master, the spiritual master will indicate what is the next step. And one must faithfully do it. Sometimes it may be difficult. Sometimes it may be easy. But one must faithfully follow the directions. Then one will become very, very elevated and very pure. And through the association of the spiritual master and following his direction, one can become a pure devotee of the Lord. Anyone and everyone, it doesn't matter wherever one is situated in life. One can become a pure devotee of the Lord if one faithfully serves the spiritual master. So somehow or other, that is the central focus in our Krishna consciousness, that relationship. And there has to be quality in there. We have to really invest energy in the relationship. It says in Bhagavad Gita, tatviri pranipatena pariprasnena sevada upadirakshanti te jana. The point is that we have to render service and there must be submissive inquiry. So the service and the submissive inquiry are there for our purification. Devotional service purifies the heart. Anartapasamam saksat bhakti yogam adoksha jay. Lokasya janato vidvams chakras satvata samhita. That devotional service takes away all material contamination from the heart. And therefore, we must somehow or other take up more devotional service. And when we have taken up so much devotional service that we cannot take up any more, then we must start working on the quality. And then we must try to improve the quality of our service. Then we will not fall down. Then we will be able to continue with our spiritual life. But if somehow or other we are not fixed in devotional service, yes, then we will be wavering on the path. So, therefore, we fix on the order of the spiritual master. In many cases, that may be a general order. And someone may feel, yes, I need a spiritual master, because otherwise, how can I remain inspired? It is so difficult. Maya is so strong. And sometimes it is said that spiritual life is a war with Maya. But on one occasion, Prabhupada said, war with Maya? Why war with Maya? He said, the criminal has to fight with the police, but we don't have to bother with that. Right? So we don't have to fight with Maya if we are simply serving Krishna. Then Maya will not affect us. Then we have no business with Maya. We are transcendental. So somehow or other, we must take up the order of the spiritual master. That will put us on the transcendental platform beyond the modes of material nature. The spiritual master can see what we can do. The general instruction, right, that we receive from a spiritual master is just as important. Chant 16 rounds, follow 4 regulative principles. Yes. So, yeah, but what did I need a spiritual master for? I already knew that. Everybody knows that, right? Why did I have to hear that from a spiritual master? No, It means that now it must be done. When there is a spiritual master, then it must be done. Before, may it was something that should be done, and that maybe was done or maybe was not done. But once we accept a spiritual master, and he says 16 rounds and 4 regulative principles, then it must be done. That is the difference. So many things may be said that were already known to us before. But when we have a relationship with the spiritual master, they become formalized. It becomes serious then. Right? All the things that we were learning before and we were regularly hearing, we could think, well, shall I follow it or not? But from the time we accept the spiritual master, then we must follow. Then we must follow everything. That is the difference. So in the beginning, there may be many general instructions, and only sometimes there may be personal instructions. But if we just take this spirit, that from the day we accept a spiritual master, accepting a spiritual master means one must follow. Only then is there is it a meaningful relationship. Many people, after having accepted a spiritual master, have the challenge to make the relationship meaningful. This is a difficult thing. Because then you have a spiritual master and it's an anticlimax. There he is, you know. And all right, it was all so nice, the classes, etc. But then after some time, there's not so much going on in the relationship. Every once in a while a letter and, you know, only 3 lines. Or sometimes no letter at all. And that's oftentimes everything. So is that so meaningful? Does it really make such a difference? We must make it meaningful by our quality that we offer to the spiritual master. If we try to make it meaningful by really becoming very good disciples and doing everything it takes to become Krishna conscious, then it will become very meaningful. It is simply like that. If we give it everything to follow the instruction of the spiritual master, then the relationship will be meaningful. So that's an important principle because in many cases the relationship has become somewhat distant and estranged. But it should be understood that then it's up to the disciple for tatviri padipatena pariprasnena, for engaging in service and inquiring from the spiritual master. So the disciple has to actually open up. It is the disciple who has to take shelter of the spiritual master. The spiritual master may penetrate through one's ignorance or may not. That depends. But the essence is that we must simply make that our main focus, Guru Seva. As far as Varna Ashram is concerned, that is another thing. It is a scientific system, and we're following that. It comes from Krishna. It said Krishna is the original spiritual master. And this Varna Ashram, Krishna says, is the natural division of mankind. So, therefore, we can find certain activities which are recommended for our particular position in life. However, it's not that Varna Ashram is enough to go back to Godhead. Right? It cannot take us back to Godhead. It must be only devotional service can take us back to the spiritual world. And then specifically, there must be chanting. So this Varna Ashram is nice, but it's not enough because going back to Godhead is our objective. Therefore, svanustitasya dharmasya sansidir haritosanam. Therefore, the process must be that when we engage in activities according to our own nature in Varna Ashram, that at the same time, Sansidir Haritosanam. Haritosanam means to please Krishna. So that must be there. We must please Krishna. Otherwise, it cannot be successful. Yeah. Krishna, if you don't please Krishna and simply act according to Varna Ashram, there is no benefit at all. No benefit at all. Right. One will simply temporarily uplift himself, free himself from sinful activity, but after some time, one will fall down again from that platform and again go to sinful activity, because the desire is not taken away from the heart. Varnashram can regulate our life, but cannot change our desires, and therefore will have doubts. It is said, one sannyasi stated that, do you have doubts? Better don't meditate on the doubts, but look for purification. Because as we're looking for purification, the doubts will disappear. Because the doubts are coming out of material attachments. And purification will free us from these material attachments. This is the way. Simply look for purification, and all doubts will disappear. And that was Prabhupada's approach. Prabhupada's approach was not psychoanalysis. Prabhupada's approach was not from, well, how do you feel? What do you experience? What do you think? No, Prabhupada's approach in dealing with doubts was simply purification. So somehow or other, that is our means. In devotional service, we must get purification. And that purification is sometimes not easy. Sarup Maharaj took sannyas in 1972, and at that time, Prabhupada was giving instructions to his GBC men. And Prabhupada was saying to them, he said, don't try for a managerial position. He says, don't worry about being in charge of bricks and cement. He is saying, simply go and preach. Simply go and preach. Go and preach. That is the life. To be in charge, or to try and be the proprietor of bricks and cement, is not the real life. The real life is to preach. So it is explained. So somehow or other, we must give life to our Krishna consciousness by sharing it with others. And it will give life to everything. Preach, knock on doors, approach people. It will give life to ourselves. It will give life to the temple. It is the key to spiritual life. There is no other way. Through preaching, we can only remain enthusiastic. The life of transcendental knowledge means the taste. It means that which gives us enthusiasm. When spiritual life is dry, it means we have become too remote from direct preaching. Yes. And then everything shrivels up and dries up. So, in this way, we can satisfy the spiritual master. Because Prabhupada is the spiritual master of this movement, and there's no doubt that Prabhupada could only be pleased through preaching. Of course, one time Prabhupada was asked, what pleases you the most, Srila Prabhupada? And Prabhupada said, when you love Krishna, that pleases me the most. Yes, so that is there. But still, we must make others love Krishna. then we are doing the greatest thing. Because the world is on fire. We are chanting in the early morning, Sansara Dhavanada Lida Loka, that the people are afflicted by a burning forest fire, which is a very precarious condition. So they must be delivered by transcendental knowledge and by the holy name. So if we combine these two, the chanting of the holy name and cultivation of transcendental knowledge and service attitude to the spiritual master, then we will become eligible to go back to the spiritual world. Okay, I'll stop. Any questions? Any comments? I think that... where did you get it from, the notes? No. I know that, but there are several sources from which they are available. So which source did you get it from? Okay. Have you also looked at Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj's course notes, Killing the Demons in Vrindavan? That's where you get more information. Have you also looked at Hayeshwar's translation of the 10th canto in Dutch on rhyme? Have you looked at that? There are footnotes, and he gives like, he puts it in a little different phrasing, little different words, slight variety. And if you read those three, then you get a much broader understanding on the whole thing. Yes. Yes, if you make the child Krishna conscious, it's also devotional service. It's like not it is possible to of course for a lady to do devotional service without having children and never have a child is also possible. But at the same time, it is very natural to have a child. So Krishna consciousness is not meant to be unnatural. So it would be very rare that a woman would have totally no interest in children. You know, it would be like somewhat. And at the same time be mentally okay. You know, women that really have no interest in children sometimes may be psychologically damaged, right? It is natural to be a mother. It is in Krishna consciousness we are addressing the ladies as mother. It's not so much that we have to see every woman, she is our mother, but we have to see every woman is a mother. Women are meant to be mother, right? They're meant to bring out the motherly qualities, and if they do that, that is good. But modern times doesn't allow us to do that so much. Modern times, you know, turns you into something else. Yeah, modern times is a very competitive society, right? So it doesn't like mother means very gentle, soft, and you know, positive, and like that, right? So many things you know better than me. Who am I to tell a mother what a mother is supposed to be? But so the point is, it's very natural to be mother, and it is very good to go into that spirit of being a mother. So having children obviously reinforces that motherly consciousness, which is a very sacrificing spirit. I mean, what mothers don't sacrifice for their kids? I mean, to us men, that is inconceivable. I mean, really, for me, when I look at it sometimes, thinking, my God, how can she tolerate it? It's inconceivable. I see so many situations. I wouldn't tolerate it and forget it, you know. the little brat, right? So, but you have to really try and make the child Krishna conscious. It's not easy. Not easy. So it's like hard work. So if you have one, then it's very nice. But then you have to also do, you cannot just say, well, you know, okay, I'll send him to the Gurukul then, right? I've done my best, you know, or like, you know, I'll read him Krishna book stories when he's a kid, and that's, then I've done pretty good, you know. Now you gotta go with him and do the needful. It's like having a child. It's a mother is like the guru, right? So it's like having a disciple, right? In a sense, you have to, you take full responsibility for that person, no matter what, right, happens to the person, to always try and bring him back to Krishna. So you have to always, somehow or other, bring your child back, sometimes with great patience. One mother, her daughter is now grown up, and the daughter is living with a karmi boyfriend, and is just no longer into Krishna consciousness, and then, you know, the mother goes to visit, and the mother said that, she said, like, you know, I have to bite my tongue, you know, and I go there, I have to just act, oh, this is your flat, how nice, you know, and I'm thinking, God, she lives here with this horrible guy. Oh, that's your friend, you know? So nice, right? And she said, like, I had to really, really tolerate God. I didn't know I could be so tolerant, but I have to do it, otherwise I'll lose her. Right? So, you know, sometimes it takes great tact and tolerance. And in this way, being a mother and always being the well-wisher and trying to make your son or daughter Krishna conscious means you have to develop saintly qualities. Only then can you do it. Right. Yeah. So it's not a small thing. But otherwise it's nice. It's a good thing.
Well, yes. Personally, I feel that attentive chanting is not just a matter of fixing our mind on the sound, but it is also appreciating what the sound really is, appreciating that we're associating with Krishna. If we are actually chanting in the mood of associating with Krishna and we're appreciating who Krishna is and how wonderful Krishna is, then it becomes our mood becomes different when we chant. Then it's more like we're reaching out to Krishna as we speak, and he's present in his name, yeah? Rather than that we're following some process. So then it becomes more sadhya instead of sadhana. And so if we're practicing chanting of Hare Krishna too much in a process of just like a sadhana, like a means of purification, then it may be like that. I think that, yes, the speed can be so high that it may be difficult to follow. There is some help in our process for attentive chanting. And too fast can be difficult, too slow can be difficult. Clear pronunciation can help. The beats are helping. I now make it a practice that at the beginning of each mantra I try to consciously squeeze my beat, yeah? So that I make like a real beginning. Yeah? This is the latest trick I'm following. Yeah, it's like because I'm noticing that I'm chanting, but and I'm chanting on the beats, but. So what is really the relationship between the beat and my mantra, in a sense? Okay, I'm counting them, right? But more than that, I found that the beats are meant to make us chant attentive. And therefore, if we just make it, if we are just a little conscious, just
I have my beat now. I channel this beat, right? So taking shelter of the beat will improve it. You know? I think then even high speed will not be a problem. I think it's like that would help. You can try. Finished. That's a little immature question. Immature question, no? Krishna is for his own pleasure, to increase the ocean of transcendental pleasure. To Krishna, it's not a major problem that the living entity spends a little time in the material world. Right? It's not like it's a problem for us. But from this perspective of eternity, what is the big deal? So we should always look at the when we start to try and judge Krishna from our perspective, you know, why is Krishna doing this? Why is Krishna that? It's very difficult because Krishna's perspective is so much greater than our perspective. He looks at it from eternity. You know. So no, it's fine. But the living entities experience that also. It's only growing pains, right? That they have to go through that, and then after Naiti Mameti Surjana, they never come back down again. Right? Once they return to the spiritual world, they don't come back down again, and they are adding to the eternal ocean of transcendental bliss. Right? So, the voluntary choice that the living entity has, right, to serve is adding a flavor to the love that he could never get. Right? So it increases the ras. So since the whole purpose of everything of Krishna is always to increase the ras, right? There's no other purpose to increase the ras. Therefore, this increases the ras. So the question has been asked by someone who is not so familiar with the philosophy, who's still looking at it quite from the outside. If one looks at it a little deeper, then it's clear. Krishna is trying to increase transcendental pleasure. And the fact that people voluntarily, that living entities voluntarily give everything to him in great love, is very much increasing the transcendental pleasure. So it's a necessity. Yes, they do. Yeah, so Krishna has his own way for increasing his transcendental pleasure. We have to understand that. So Krishna has different varieties of flavors, right? Just as we have different varieties of flavors on our plate, you know. And we want to taste some different varieties. So Krishna wants to taste this variety of our voluntary surrender. Right? He is himself experiencing great pleasure in the fact that we are voluntarily, not forced, but that we are voluntarily surrendering to him. So Krishna enjoys his energies. Yatharbhaga Pratibimba. He is like a boy who is enjoying his own reflections. Right? So he's enjoying his own energies. So it's enjoyable to Krishna. He wants to taste it. And we can see how there's a taste. So he tastes different varieties, not just Shakti Tattva, but also Jiva Tattva. Not just chapati, also puri. Not just tomato chutney, also pineapple chutney, also apple chutney. Different flavors. Right? Transcendental variety. Krishna is a person. he has taste. No more questions. I've exhausted Gauranga's questions. The Vedic artists were not fanatics. They have no problem with it. Light blue, dark blue, or a white marble deity for Krishna, or a black marble deity, you know. Because the whole mood is different, right? We are coming to the empiric school. So in the empiric school, you know, like we are trying to define things super, super rigidly. Vedic culture doesn't have this approach. It's kind of, because it's the Avaroha Panta. The difference between Aroha Panta and Avaroha Panta is there's the descending process and the ascending process. The empiric philosopher goes to the ascending process. So he has to go through the process of neti neti, not this, not this. He has to determine what is spirit and matter by dint of his own analysis. He has to say, is this spirit? I don't know. No, this is not. Is this spirit? No, this is not. So therefore, for him, he has to be very, very strict. But in the descending process, right, Krishna manifests himself, and sometimes he may manifest himself, and to some he may appear a little darkish, to some he may appear a little lighter. You know, there can be some variety, no problem. Not necessarily that Krishna has variety, but the artist may have a little bit of a concept of variety. We're looking at so many pictures of Krishna. Here's a picture of Krishna, right? It's a particular form. To me, he looks a little heavy built on that picture here, right opposite of me. There's another picture of Krishna there. He's like boyish, right? Then there's Gopinath, you know. He looks totally different again, right? So who is Krishna? Which one looks like Krishna? Which one is actually Krishna? All of them are Krishna, because Krishna is manifesting himself through these forms. So whether we have a black Krishna, Krishna is manifesting himself. Whether it's a white Krishna, he manifests himself. Whether it's a chubby Krishna, he manifests himself. Whether it's a tall Krishna, he manifests himself. Right? All these different paintings of Krishna, very different. Like we see this new back to Godhead, you know, with like Krishna and Balaram, like boys, you know, and then skinny boys. And Balaram is much taller than Krishna, and they really look like boys that are changing their teeth kind of thing, you know, like, I don't know, not like the usual little round Krishna. But anyway, they're also Krishna, because Krishna manifests himself through all these forms. They're like deities, all the painting, and Krishna manifests himself through these deities. Right? So one should see like that. They're not pictures of Krishna, they're actually deities. It's mentioned like that, no? That the deity can be manifest in marble, in painting, in picture, in drawing on sand, and in clay, and in wood, and all these materials can be manifest. So these are deities, these pictures. That's why, you know, strictly speaking, right, people used to turn the pictures around before they go to sleep. Remember? Yeah? That used to be a standard at one stage, right? Everyone used to either cover the pictures or turn the pictures around before going to sleep, because they're deities of Krishna. Anyway, I mean, like in India, they don't, you know, they don't worry so much because they're close to Krishna, and they kind of feel like, well, Krishna doesn't mind if I sleep, you know. Okay? So we don't have to worry too much that every picture is to be turned around at night. You know? Krishna understands also. Because in India, it's more the family spirit, you know. I mean, we're all in the family. You know? You do everything in the family all together. You sleep in front of everyone. You bathe in front of it. You know, in India, it's amazing. The whole family lives in one house, and there's one pump outside, and they all take bath outside. The ladies also, they cover themselves. They put the underskirt up to here, and they have a gamsha around them, and they pour water in there. How they do it, I don't know. But everything goes on, you know, in public. Everything is public in India. Everything. It's amazing. In simple life. Yeah. Very public. So Krishna is also a little public. So that's why. But it is Krishna. It's not a picture of Krishna. It's Krishna. Yeah, that's also there. Yeah, then it's part of the deity worship. You know, it means Lakshmi Narayan deity worship means you're giving great respect to Krishna. That's why you turn the picture. He sees you anyway, but you do it like, you know, the pictures. So you turn all the pictures. It's your deity worship. At night. Like that. Anyway, we don't have to be too fanatic. Yes. Yes. At home, it's okay. What can you do? You know, you're at home, you don't have... Nobody is so rich that they can have a tulsi room and a temple room and this room and that room, you know, a dress room, deity dress room. Come on, you know, it's like, at home, it's okay. So Krishna consciousness can be practical. Yes, just the artist. But Krishna is so kind to the artist that he manifests himself through the picture of the artist. That's all. This is the artist. You know, a particular artist. I mean, from an art point of view, I would say the body is a little short. It's somewhat on the chubby side. You know, yeah. From a critical point of view, if you look at it, like say. But Dhoti a little short. You know, yeah. He's got a really short dhoti on. So if you got garland a little too long, right? It says the Vajayanti Mala is over the knees, but this one is on the toes, practically speaking, right? Well, maybe not. Anyway, whatever. If you start, you know, like look with a picture in that way, then you see faults. Right? But it doesn't matter. Krishna is manifesting himself. He's like kind enough to manifest himself to his pictures. But you've never seen the monsoon clouds in Vrindavan, yeah? No, there's all kinds of colors, and it's like the monsoon cloud in Vrindavan has so many colors, and some are really blue, really blue. I mean, very blue. Also in South Africa, you know, like I'm seeing sometimes clouds, they're so blue. It's amazing how blue they are. And the sun, see, in India, in the rainy season, the sun is at its very highest peak. And it's so bright, the sun. So the sun is shining even through the clouds. The clouds, yeah, so there's light, so the clouds become effulgent. Right? So the clouds get like light. It comes like right through and it becomes very blue. And so Krishna is like that. And sometimes so light that Krishna is described as just being white because it's so white, so light. The effulgence is so strong. So although Krishna is dark, sometimes he's described like white because of the effulgence. Such an overwhelming effulgence. Yeah? So therefore, Krishna is dark and light at the same time because it's effulgent. The light shines right through the darkness and it makes it light. Although it's dark and it's bluish, darkish and bluish. You see, and so effulgent that it's hard to say if it's black or blue. Or even whitish or golden. And all that mixes into the color of Krishna. Till you figure it out. Okay, I think we've come to the end. Thanks a lot. Bring your friends next time.